Welcome. The program is Force and Feeling, a program about emotions, our emotional lives, and how emotions affect ourselves and the world. I'm your host, Julie Motz, and my guest today is Dr. Martha Eddy, a somatic movement therapist. Welcome, Martha.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm looking forward to this conversation with you.
So perhaps you could just start by telling us what a somatic movement therapist is, or quite simply what you do.
Well, unfortunately, I can't say either is a simple answer, but because they both represent a spectrum of possibilities, I can say a little bit about what somatic movement education and therapy is as a field, and then kind of focus in on my work, if that would help.
That would be great.
Great. Somatic movement education and therapy is a field that has been developing over the last 100 years. From diverse sources that really began on their own, not as a field, but just different people that went into their own body experiences in order to heal. They may have tried every type of medical possibility and had no success, or they may have just been led to self-inquiry on their own. And the kind of people I'm talking about are Moshe Feldenkrais and F.M. Alexander from around the world. More recently, I have studied with Irmgard Bartenieff, who passed away in 1980, so it's not that recent, and she was the protege of Rudolf Laban. So different people, again, in this case from Germany. And then I still have a mentor who is alive and kicking, and her name is Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen, who's the founder of Body Mind Centering.
So and that's how we met, you and
yeah.
I, because I became very interested in Bonnie's work and studied it for a while.
Exactly, and I really would love to talk more about that confluence. The BMC work, the Alexander work, the Feldenkrais work, the Bartenieff work share this commonality of people investigating their own bodily experience, both for physical relief and knowledge and also for psychophysical kind of inquiry, just learning more about themselves. And what we say is we can even make decisions from the body level. And I know you work with that as well.
Well, it was actually Bonnie who introduced me to that idea, the mind of the body, which I later generalized to say that what we call personality or mind is not localized to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that the statement, move from your bones, had meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And that bones themselves, that any tissue had intention, any organ had intention, not just intention, but its own perception of the world as well as the body, and that eventually even each cell had its own intention and perception. That was something that I really got from Bonnie's work.
Yes, that's really the heart of the work. I had heard the term cellular intelligence from other sources, and for me that was very validating of the body-mind-centering work that we referred to as BMC. With BMC, we just simply say that the mind is in the body, the mind is throughout the body, there is the mind of each part of the body, there's cellular intelligence in every type of tissue. And then we spend quite a bit of time, as I know you know, with differentiating the different minds or personalities or emotionalities of these different types of tissue.
You know, it's interesting because people are certainly they're aware of the idea of multiple selves in anything from schizophrenia to the simple sense that sometimes there's a voice telling you to do things that doesn't seem to be your own voice.
Mm.
So there's this general sense of multiple selves, but I think very few people have the idea that there are multiple healthy selves of the body, individuals working in a community to bring about this whole that we call I.
Fascinating, because I couldn't quite hear if you were saying C-E-L-L-S or S-E-L-V-E-S.
Well, I was saying each at different
yes,
at different
and
times.
They really do have a kind of, again, correlation. So it was exciting to hear that.
Well, I remember it was in the process of doing Bonnie's work that, you know, this idea really seized me that of what goodwill the cells of the body have, that the cells just want to make you happy. They want to do whatever you ask them to do insofar as they possibly can.
Mm.
Until or at such point that you neglect them and they sort of feel they're on their own and have to go for whatever they can get.
This talk has its history also in the Laban thinking. He wrote about cellular communities, and that was exciting for me to discover in my reading. And when we talked about cancer in the BMC community, we would sometimes say that somehow the general community of cells is not finding, or the cancer cells are not finding community with the general community of cells. And there's a discourse that needs to happen between these two different kind of parties, if you will.
Yeah. And I've always felt, since cancer cells are relatively undifferentiated, that it really mirrors the fetus not finding community with the mother, you know, in the gestational process. So there's something that happens where these cells get neglected at that point and don't start to differentiate and grow and stay in the body and never find the harmony, and then suddenly just decide I'd better go for it on my own.
Oh, certainly our work has a very strong embryonic base, and so the second strand of the body-mind-centering work, paralleling with the differentiation of tissue, is the developmental perspective. So from conception through death, what is organic to every human being, what is evolutionary to our species, to our genus, and then also what is going on ontologically for each person.
I want to ask you a great deal more about that, but I first want to ask you how you got interested in this work to begin with. What drew you to it?
Well, I was very fortunate in that I was studying at Hampshire College, and my work was very much in socialist feminist studies, but I had a background as a performer already. I had been part of a company as a high school student in New York City, dancing at diverse venues such as public libraries and the Museum of Modern Art outdoors with a woman named Laura Forman. And so when I got to college, I continued to dance, and the dance professor there was a wonderful woman who has a completely different name now, but at the time was Francia McClellan, and now is Tara Steppenberg. And she was both studying with Irmgard Bartenieff and next-door neighbors with Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen. So this woman introduced me to the two women that would change my life. And I had the privilege at the age of really 17 of getting to know both of these amazing somatic educators and pioneers, and was drawn to the work. Even though I continued my work in social sciences, I stayed on a parallel track with this inquiry into the body.
And then, you know, what path did you follow to sort of come to where you are today?
Well, it's interesting. I found myself dancing a little less and less and letting the dance become more avocational and shifting into doing more one-on-one work with people. At the time, no one knew what a movement therapist was or certainly what somatic therapy was. So this, we're talking about 1970s. So many
early days.
Yeah. Many of us went on and got massage therapy licenses, which in the local town, that wasn't even a state licensure, so we could just register in town, and did what we called massage therapy, but it was fully clothed, and it was with touch. That was the key linking ingredient, but very different, and this is something more to say about somatic education or somatic movement therapy, whichever brand one chooses, is that it's an educational process. We're very much interested in just helping facilitate people find their own body wisdom. So there are many maps along the way, as we've just talked about body-mind centering. The map there is of differentiating and sensitizing to tissue, a process we call embodiment, learning to feel what bone feels like compared to organ tissue, and what type of movement emerges from that, what kind of personality, what kind of decision-making comes from each of those voices.
And how do you teach people how to do that?
So that was a lot of my early work, was simply spending time with people, practicing different qualities of being through movement. So the dance background was very helpful. Touching very sensitively, so the additional massage therapy training was actually quite helpful. Feeling comfortable with that dyadic relationship through touch. And then a third avenue for teaching is very much the voice, whether it be intellectual discourse or the use of the voice for vibration and sound making. So we'll spend quite a lot of time in any one session going in and out of those three different modalities, touch, movement, and talking or sound making.
Well, suppose somebody says to you, for example, you know, move from, I don't know what you mean move from my bone. I can't feel my bone as distinct. How do you lead them to that sensibility?
Wonderful question. I mean, generally people never came in with that kind of question. They came in because their shoulder hurt or because they were pregnant and had back pain or the like. And that's how I teach in my own somatic movement therapy training that I've developed. I say, let's look at a body area. Let's talk about the kinds of things that might be emerging from that part of the body, be they metaphors, be they images, be they issues or actual diagnosed ailments. And then, okay, what can we do? So let's say that it is a joint problem. Well, one of the things to do is to actually touch the joint, palpate the area, see whether there's what we call equal joint space in the area or compression off into one direction or another.
And so equal joint space would mean that the joints are sort of floating equidistant from, the bones are floating equidistant from each other.
But within the entire range of that joint,
yes.
So, for instance, this is where the Laban background, which includes a whole spatial analysis of where our body is in space, and is definitely an influencing factor in the body-mind-centering work in that Bonnie Bainbridge-Cohen also studied Laban movement analysis, will look at, okay, is the upper arm bone, the humerus, directed more forward, or is it really central into the socket, or is it slumping backwards? And depending on where it sits, there's compression in one part of the joint more than another. And that can cause, for instance, a bursitis to start to develop. So what we want to do is find which level of tissue is most receptive, for instance, to this process right now. Maybe the person dealing with the whole person, for instance, maybe the person is already quite injured and in pain, so we wouldn't want to use a lot of pressure. In that case, we might do a more gentle activation of the fluids, of the synovial fluid in that capsule. If the person was not in
so
pain.
I don't mean to interrupt you. So
sure,
if you activate the synovial fluid,
mm-hmm. is it with jiggling kind of movement?
Is it that the synovial fluid has a certain health to it and the other tissues would start to imitate that? Or what actually, how does that affect the other tissues?
Well, if we're talking about a kind of a bursitis in the joint, then there may be inflammation in the joint. So by bringing more fluidity into the joint capsule itself, one would help hope that the homeostasis of that joint would kind of increase.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still specific to the shoulder joint that I'm thinking right now, although what you're describing of one body area kind of teaching the whole body is another avenue that we work with. So, for instance, if a joint, a shoulder joint was hurting on the left side so badly, we might do this whole lesson on the right side and then ask the person through their nervous system, through their consciousness, to actually begin to compare the right and left shoulder and bring the knowledge from one side to the other through the more cortical kind of channels.
I was actually thinking of another experience that I had when I brought an ALS patient to see Bonnie.
Mm-hmm.
And as she was feeling down the tissue, her idea was that somewhere in that area there was a tissue that was healthy. Maybe
mm-hmm.
if the nerves weren't, the muscle was. Maybe if the muscle wasn't, you know, the tendons were.
Mm-hmm.
And that the health of that tissue, if you addressed, if you asked that tissue to do the moving, could teach the other tissues right next to it how to be healthy.
That's particularly true with the nervous system. I mean, that's true of any system, actually. Sure, one of the principles in my own work is to begin with what to observe very, very keenly. I have a kind of a triadic cycle, which is observe or witness, then support what's really working, give kind of credence and value and vitality to what is working, and then move into possible change if there's a desire for more options for choice.
Okay. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back.